BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, Anne Scott James, and Dennis Norton. Here's round one to try and test their vocabularies. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words right. We begin with Dillis Powell. Dillis, I want to know the meaning of the word decimate.
Decimate? Means to take one out of every 10.
Why?
Well, you kill them.
That's it. To put to death 1 in 10, usually with mutinous or cowardly soldiers who are running away from the fight, to encourage the others, of course. And it comes from a Latin word meaning to take the 10th man. But when you took him, you killed him. 2 marks. Now, Dennis Norton, what is the meaning of the word adit? A-D-I-T. Adit.
If you conjugate the verb to live, you get I live, he is living, she will live, he's at it.
Dennis, try treating it as a noun.
I think I've treated it badly enough.
Something to do with an approach, mustn't it?
Yes.
A going to.
That'll do. 2 marks. It's an approach, but more particularly and mostly used as the horizontal entrance to a mine when you're driving in underground, but not sort of by pit shaft, but horizontally. Anne Scott James, what is the meaning of Boeotian? B-O-E-O-T-I-A-N. Boeotian.
With a capital B. Oh, Boeotia's a province in the Greece, which Thebes was the capital, and they were expected, they were regarded by the Athenians being frightfully stupid. It means sort of thick.
Absolutely right. Well done. 2 marks. Frank Muir, what is a bubo? B-U-B-O.
What indeed is it?
To the plague.
Yes.
Plague.
Oh, yes, bubo, the plague which gets you in the nicks. It's because it's a bubonic plague.
Yes, on the
way. And the bubonic plague is called bubonic because of the bubo, which is the groin.
Yes.
Which is where you swell, or used to, when you got it.
I can get your 2 marks. A bubo is an inflamed swelling, and you get it in the more glandular bits of your body, particularly the groin or the armpit, hence bubonic plague, which is one of the symptoms of which is these terrible swellings. Bubo. Now, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I hope that the 2 women members of the team will go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the programme I shall ask them where the quotations come from. And Dennis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is the lass with the delicate air, and Anne Scott James and Dennis, here's yours, say it with flowers. And then at the end of the programme, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these came to be said or written. Next round takes us into the world of thrillers. For 2 marks, Dillis Powell, what writer created Lemmy Caution?
Peter Cheney.
Thank you, Frank. Peter Cheney.
A character in the thrillers of Peter Cheney, Lemmy Caution. Dennis Norton, who was secret agent OSS 117?
Could it be John Buchanan?
No, it's a Frenchman.
Frenchman?
Mm-hmm.
French. Is this... I've seen paperbacks by somebody called Jean or Jean Bruce.
Yes, quite right.
Yes, well, that's... But I've never read any. And I can't tell you anything about him.
Yes.
Except he was called Os... Deset.
He was actually called Hubert Bonisseur de la Barthe. B-A-T-H.
The French know how to arrange these things.
But certainly 1 mark for getting John Bruce, who is the author. Long before people had heard of James Bond, the character of Hubert Bonisseur de la Barthe was a household word in France and a sort of prototype of that kind of agent. Anne Scott James, What writer created the character Tiger Man? M-A-N-N. Tiger Man.
I just do not know, and I don't think I can guess.
Character in Mickey Spillane. Oh. No marks. Frankly, who is April Dancer?
Oh, she's the girl from Uncle.
Yes, quite right. 2 marks. The next round concerns verse and poetry, and what I do is to give each member of each team a bit of a quotation and ask them for the next line or two. 2 marks if they can finish off the quotation, and 2 more for naming its source. Beginning with Dillis Powell, when daisies pied and violets blue, and lady smocks all silver white, and cuckoo buds of yellow hue do paint the meadows with delight, the cuckoo then on every tree mocks married men, for thus sings he.
To wit, to woo.
No. I've never met a cuckoo who did that.
He does impressions.
Well, he does his cuckoo.
The ventriloquist.
He's the unusual cuckoo.
Very unusual cuckoo.
Cuckoo, cuckoo. Cuckoo. I've a guess.
Something note. And welcome to the Merry Dear.
That's near enough.
Yes.
Author and play?
Shakespeare.
Play?
We don't know.
You know that. I think 2.5 out of 4. It's the cuckoo then on every tree mocks married men, for thus sings he, cuckoo, 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 a word of fear, unpleasing to a married ear. It's a song from Love's Labour's Lost, Shakespeare. Now, Dennis Norden, you know, my friends, how long since in my house for a new marriage I did make carouse, divorced old barren reason from my bed.
Brighted up the baroness instead.
Not far off.
I don't know this.
And all the nouns have capital letters to start them, which might...
Oh, well, it's Omakaya.
Yes. Bit of a clue.
Great one on the capital letters, isn't he?
Yeah. And translated by?
Edward Fitzgerald.
Okay. I don't think we're going to get the last line exactly. I think 3 out of 4. You know, my friends, how long since in my house for a new marriage I did make carouse, divorced old barren reason from my bed, and took the daughter of the vine to spouse. Now, Ancelot James, raise me a dace of silk and down, hang it with vair and purple dyes, carve it in doves and pomegranates and peacocks with 100 eyes, work it in gold and silver grapes, in leaves and silver fleur-de-lis.
It's very flamboyant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody whose nest was in a watered chute.
Oh, Chris Rossetti.
Oh.
My heart is in, singing bird.
Well done.
Christina Rossetti.
2 out of 4 is fairly generous. I do give some help. It's Christina Rossetti, a little poem called A Birthday. Work it in gold and silver grapes, in leaves and silver fleur-de-lis, because the birthday of my life is come, my love is come to me. Now, Frank Muir. Did I say all? No. One was lame, and could not dance the whole of the way. And afterwards, if you would blame his sadness, he was used to say, it's dull in our town, since my playmates left. I can't forget that I'm bereft.
Oh, yes. It's very sad, this. This is a poem, Jay. And the River Weser is wall-washing to the south.
That's right.
And this is a poor little ratty. who was lame, he.
Yeah.
And couldn't follow the Pied Piper.
That's right.
Got left behind. Fortunate he. Fortunate rat.
Well, not rat. You're a little
child. That's right, it's a child, yeah. A bit hazy on the plot, yes. That's right, yes.
Author?
Yes. It's Browning.
Yes.
It's poor little lame chap.
That's it. 3 out of 4. You didn't get the next lines. Robert Browning's Pied Piper of Hamelin.
If I tried, I could have done.
Afterwards, if you would blame his sadness, he was used to say, "It's dull in our town since my playmates left. I can't forget that I am bereft of all the pleasant sights they see, which the piper also promised me," which was all about a joyous land which joined the town and was just at hand. 3 out of 4. Well, now a round of origins and derivations. 3 marks this time. If members of the teams can first of all give me the present meaning and then give me the origin and derivation of these words or expressions or phrases. And the list, pal, Pons Asinorum, or the Ass's Bridge.
Bit of Euclid.
Yes, quite right.
It's a theorem in Euclid, which is a...
Number one.
Well. I thought it was an easy one.
No, you got it inside out.
It's a difficult one, then. Mm-hmm. And which one is it now?
Run through them.
Two sides of an isosceles triangle or something like
yes.
that. It's the one.
Well done. Brilliant, Dennis. 3 marks. It's the 5th proposition of the 1st book of Euclid, which is the first really stinking and difficult theorem, which the more stupid people rarely get over the first time without stumbling. So it's a stumbling block rather than a bridge. But if you do get over it, it bridges the way to more advanced work. And it is the one which is about the angles at the base of an isosceles triangle. Well done. 3 marks. Dennis Norden, a bad lot.
Well, it means a villain, somebody untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the derivation is... It could be... It's an auctioneer, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot in the sense of an auction, something that's put up for sale that isn't worth having.
Yep, quite right. 3 marks. And Scott James, the end of one's tether.
Means you're absolutely fed up and can't go another inch.
Yes. And from?
Well, I should think it comes from the tethering of beasts. When they're stretched to the uttermost, they can't go any further.
What are they trying to do?
What are they trying to do? Stray away from the peg, from the place to which they're pegged.
Yes, but why?
The grass is always greener the other
That's
side
it.
Of the fence.
That's it. All right, you get your 3 marks. The end of one's tether means reaching the limit of your endurance or your resources and exhausting your powers, but it is an animal tethered to a rope or chain, so that he can graze only as far as the tether permits. And when he's got to the end of the tether, he can't get further, and he can't get any more to eat. Frank Miller, blackguard.
Blackguard is a very bad lot. scoundrel.
Yes.
A man not to be trusted. An unsound fellow. Is named after some guards who were dressed in black.
Yes. What were they there for?
They were supposed to guard this princely fellow.
Yes.
And they
well
didn't.
Done. all sorts of origins. It originally meant the scullions in a great house, those who had charge of the pots and pans, therefore got rather black in the process of cleaning them. Noblemen at some time in round about the 17th century had a special bodyguard uniformed in black, who were known as the Black Guard, and they actually had decrees against them. There's one of May the 7th, 1683... Whereas a sort of vicious, idle, and masterless rogues and boys, commonly called the Black Guard, with divers other lewd and loose fellows, do usually haunt and follow the court, we do hereby strictly charge all those so-called, with all other loose, idle men who have intruded themselves into His Majesty's court and stables, to depart upon pain and imprisonment. So they were a pretty tough lot. And now we come to the last round, and go back to those 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. The 2 marks, Lewis Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation, The Lass with the Delicate Air?
It's a song.
Yes.
Stephen Foster.
One out of 2.
Yes.
It's a song. Nobody knows the author. It's anonymous. And it goes, young Molly who lives at the foot of the hill, whose fame every maiden with envy doth fill, of beauty is blessed with so ample a share, men call her the Lass with the Delicate Air. 1 out of 2. And I and Scott James, can I have the origin of your quotation, which was, say it with flowers?
Well, the only bell it rings with me is that it's an advertising slogan you see up in flower shops.
Mm.
Designed to further the sales of same.
I think that's probably good enough. 2 marks. It was coined by a chap called Patrick O'Keefe, but it is the great slogan of the Society of American Florists. Now I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Frank Muir and his quotation, "The Lass with the Delicate Air."
Well, it's okay this evening because I haven't got to tell a story. The producer said that he'll let me off the story tonight. In fact, he bet me 5 bob. Instead of telling a story, I would just tell you what my nickname was at school, what the boys called me. So all I've got to do is tell you, and so that's easy. They called me the... rather curious circumstances. We had this party, you see, after the show last week, and Tony Shine, the producer, was there, and this idiot, this oaf, that I hadn't seen since I was at school, and he saw me and said, "Oh, look, oh, I know him, we were at school together," and he grabbed Tony and said, "No, we used to call him, and then he said, I was at school with this fool, his name is Ginger Thwaites or something. You can imagine the sort of bloke. I knew he'd amount to nothing then. He's the same age as me, and you know what he is? A high court judge. he probably couldn't get into advertising or fashion photography or something. Well, you expect that sort of thing, so he has to go and tell Tony, you see, and Tony said, "I'll give you 5 bob if you'll say the nickname on the show next week." I don't need 5 bob. I've got 5 bob. The trouble is, I do need another 5 bob. Because of this window. You see, that my children, they gave me this worry egg for my birthday. You know, there's a little little marble-coloured eggs, which you buy from Italy, and they're about 4 and 11. And I was standing there with... Well, you remember in the medieval times, monks, when their purity were tested, they were put in a cell with a naked lady all night, see whether they're steadfast or not. Well, that test is as nothing compared to standing with a worry egg in your hand. They're heavy and round, just by a large bedroom window. But actually, I broke it, you know, a marvellous feeling to throw this smooth bit of marble. And the wind is out, bedroom window. And my wife said it's 10 bob for the new glass, and I owe her 10 bob, and I've only got 5 bob. So I said, "Yes, Tony, you know, I'll get your 5 bob, and I'll say..." All I'm going to say is that when I was at school, I was known as the... But tell you what the trouble was, is it... When I was at school at that period, I was given sixpence to have my hair cut, which dates me. And I desperately needed the sixpence to buy something. I wanted to buy one of those tin daggers with a spring in the handle and the blade goes back, because I was mounting a big production of pirates, and I desperately needed this sixpence. So I cut my own hair. And I did this by putting a pudding basin, on my head and clipping round. And it's much more difficult than it sounds when you get round the back bit. And the pudding bowl kept slipping. So I ended up with this curious sort of mop of hair, deckle-edged. See, it had an edge, like a paper doily, all scalloped. It gave me rather an effeminate appearance. You remember in those days, schoolboys' hair, tonsorial at least, looked like miniature sergeant majors. And here I had this mop of deckle-edged paper doily hair and this effeminate appearance, and that's why the boys... if I just whisper it, will you promise not to tell anybody? I must have the 5 bob. I used to be called the Lass with the Doily Cut Hair.
Happy to report that Frank now has it cut professionally. We'll go on to Dennis Norden. If you remember, his quotation was, "Say it with flowers."
Many years ago, Frank and I, early in our careers, augmented the miserable income we received as BBC script writers by setting up a little business which we called Rent-A-Joke. It was quite a public service, actually. You see, there are ever so many people who like to think of themselves or to be thought of by their friends as wits, funny men, you see. So we used to supply them with funny sayings which they could trot out spontaneously in response to some situation in their life. But we also used to arrange that situation. You don't understand what I mean, do you? I'll give you an example. You see, there was one chap who was taking a rather important business colleague to the opera, and we arranged that in the middle of the second act, a life-sized, heavily weighted model of a small boy suddenly plunged down from the flies towards the floor of the stage. But obviously, our chap's business colleague said, "What in heaven is that child doing?" And our chap said, brief beforehand, "Nothing, it's just a stage he's going through." Well, see, we had arranged the whole thing. Well, now you've got it, see. Well, now, one day, I was sitting in the office alone because Frank was out collecting material for his novel. You know, paper, printing. And in came this chap who needed our services. Now, I'll tell you his position. I shall refer to him as Mr. A-M, because that's how he was known in our files. You see, we didn't have a file that went N-Z, so everybody was known as A-M. Now, his was a very rich man who had met a beautiful girl, and he wanted her to like him for himself, not for his money. Wanted to like him for his charm and his wit. And I said to him, "Well, now, when are you meeting this girl?" He said, "Tonight." He said, "I'm going round to her flat, and I'm picking her up at 7:30. I said, "She lives in a block of flats, eh?" "Right. This is what you do. You go to her flat. You pick her up, you will get into the lift. When you get in the lift, you will see a man with a red moustache. That will be me. I shall be carrying over my shoulder a very large, mahogany, 8-foot-long grandfather clock." Now, this is obviously bound to attract the attention of your girlfriend, who will nudge you and point. Whereupon you will adopt a humorous cast of countenance, lean forward, tap my shoulder, and say, "I say, old chap, wouldn't it be simpler to wear a wristwatch?" The girl will then emit a tinkle of laughter and squeeze your arm appreciatively, and you're off. And I said, "Well, now, tell me where she lives." And he told me the address of the block of flats. And I said, "Well, you go there, and you'll be there at 7:30. I shall be in that lift at 7:32. Which I was, with the grandfather clock. There was a bit of trouble coming on the bus with it. But I got there at 7:32, and this 8-foot grandfather clock at the slope, I entered the lift, pressed the top button, went up to the top floor, pressed another button, went down again, went up again, went down, went up, went down, went up. About 10:15, I began to get a bit worried. It wasn't just that the thing over my shoulder. I began to appreciate that saying about time weighing heavily. And it wasn't just the non-appearance of my client. The motion of the lift, something had gone wrong with the chiming mechanism. And it was now, every 15 minutes, it was doing midnight. There were the other residents of the flats who kept coming out and peering and then going back and putting their door chains on. But it does say quite a lot for the stoicism of your London flat dweller that it wasn't till 1:15 that they sent for the squad car. Well, of course, when they arrived, it was no use. I just had to tell them everything, the whole story. And they put me some pretty searching questions, during the course of which they elicited something which I myself had failed to discover. This blooming girl lived on the ground floor. I could have gone up and down all night. So when Mr. A-M phoned in the morning and said, what happened? I said, you may well ask. I said, next time you give the address of a girl who lives in the block of flats, kindly take heed of the slogan of the Society of American Florists. Say it with flaws.
Well, by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Norden wins the contest of the two stories, but nevertheless, the entire My Word contest is won by the other team, Frank Muir and Dillis Power, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. ¶¶